From Pacifica Radio, this is Democracy Now! Today, a look at the Pelican Bay riot. 15 people have been shot, one is dead. Who benefits from racial tension in the maximum security prison? And the Los Angeles Police Department is rocked by an ever-widening scandal. We'll speak with California State Senator Tom Hayden, now in Belfast, as well as a former police officer and others. All that and more coming up on Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now! Welcome to Democracy Now! I'm Amy Goodman. Texas Governor George Bush has spent a record $60 million as he and his rival John McCain prepare for the expensive and crucial primaries in New York, California, and other states on March 7th. The $60 million on a campaign that has so far netted 57 delegates, according to a tally by the New York Times. More than 1,000 are needed for the nomination. McCain has 95 delegates. No presidential candidate has raised or spent as much money as Bush. Before the first vote was cast in New Hampshire, Bush had raised nearly $70 million and spent $50 million, according to the Federal Election Commission. A disgraced Los Angeles police officer who blew the whistle on a widespread corruption scandal will be sentenced today for stealing cocaine from an evidence room. Rafael Perez faces a 5-year prison sentence under an immunity deal covering other crimes he's admitted to investigators. After his arrest in 1998 in the cocaine case, Perez detailed alleged misconduct among his fellow officers, including beatings and shootings of innocent people. So far, the scandals resulted in 20 officers being relieved of duty. Some 40 tainted convictions have been overturned. Several hundred more cases are under review. In just a few minutes, we'll be spending the show looking at the LAPD scandal as well as the Pelican Bay riot. This news from Huntsville, Texas. Critics of capital punishment say George W. Bush missed a prime opportunity last night to demonstrate his compassionate conservatism. The Texas governor denied a last-minute reprieve for condemned killer Betty Lou Beetz. The 62-year-old woman was given a lethal injection for the murder of her fifth husband. Prosecutors say Beetz killed her husband for insurance and pension money in 1983. She was also convicted of shooting and wounding her second husband and has been charged but never tried in the 81 shooting death of her fourth husband. Beetz insisted she was innocent and had recently said she'd also endured years of domestic violence. That issue prompted organizations dealing with domestic violence victims to push for a delay in the trial. Meanwhile, the U.S. Supreme Court will hear arguments Monday on whether the so-called Effective Death Penalty Act of 1996 should deny those facing execution the right to appeal when there's new evidence on their innocence. Hundreds of protesters are planning a mass civil disobedience and rally Monday morning in support of death row prisoner Mumia Abu-Jamal, that rally in front of the Supreme Court. In this news from Louisiana, the Justice Department has accused guards at a privately run juvenile prison of violating inmates' rights by habitually using excessive force, so-called chemical restraints, and allowing fights over basic items like food and clothing. The prison is owned and operated by the Wackenhut Corrections Corporation, opened in 1998, and is one of two privately run juvenile prisons in the state. A Wackenhut spokesperson called the report exaggerated. California prison officials now say guards wounded 15 prisoners and killed one when they opened fire to stop a riot at the Pelican Bay State Prison. We'll have more on that story later in the news. And a remarkable homecoming. After 39 years of exile in Britain, Australia, and Africa, Preston King finally woke up in America. King was a 24-year-old graduate student in the early 1960s when the draft board in Albany, Georgia, after learning that he was black, stopped referring to him as Mr. King and began addressing him as Preston. King said at the time he was willing to serve in the military as long as the board called him by the same respectful title it used in correspondence when it assumed he was white. The board refused, and King was convicted of draft evasion by an all-white jury and sentenced to 18 months in prison. While on bail, he fled to Britain, where he enrolled at the London School of Economics. King could not return to the United States until President Clinton issued a pardon this past Monday. Even though President Jimmy Carter, a fellow Georgian and political ally of the King family, issued a blanket pardon in 1977 for all draft evaders, it extended back only to 64 and did not cover King's 1961 conviction. The kind of action that King took is a family tradition. His brother, whose funeral he attended when he returned home, Clennon W. King Jr., was briefly committed to an insane asylum because he had tried to enroll in the all-white University of Mississippi in the 1950s.
Sleep, get the best of me. My brothers are dying. Is there anybody trying? Devils in a blue dress. I see Rudy Giuliani runs this mob like a mafia don. And this mob's called the NY Police Squad. Devils in a blue dress. They backed by the King Pataki. Glide like warriors and sting like a German Nazi. Earth's the burning grounds below heaven and angels. They put a Glock slug in the back of Kevin to Daniel. I see a black man on death row simply for defending himself against the devil. Yo, his name's Mumia, political slave. These sick days are grave before the day to victimize Mumia. Shit's real. On Christmas Day, they close shot William Whitfield, the pigs peel. Do they consider it a big deal? It's about time they locked up Lavoldi. Put him with my homies. I bet the devil got an eye for me. Bet these lyrics got him really vexed. But to be damned by the devils, to be truly blessed. My brothers are dying.
You are listening to Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now! I'm Amy Goodman. As we turn now to the rapidly unfolding scandal that is enveloping the Los Angeles Police Department. Members of the LAPD's Rampart Division anti-gang unit, working from what they allege was a list of 10,000 purported gang members, colluded with a little-known unit of the Immigration and Naturalization Service to deport at least 160 Latino immigrants and deny others citizenship. This according to federal authorities in the Los Angeles Times. Former Rampart Community Resources Against Street Hoodlums officer, that's Crash, Rafael Perez, who's seeking a lesser sentence on cocaine theft charges, has told investigators that LAPD officers concerned about citizens' complaints against them use the INS to have witnesses to police abuse deported. Well, today we're going to look at the case of the LAPD collaborating with the INS in a particular case, and then look more broadly at the overall scandal that is unfolding. The latest chapter in the scandal involves the imprisonment and attempted deportation of Alex Sanchez, who is a Latino activist in Los Angeles. He's being held at the Federal Immigration Detention Facility in San Pedro, California. He said his January 21st arrest by Rampart officer Jesus Amezcua came after months of threats and harassment against him and his group, Homies Unidos, a group working to end gang violence. Meanwhile, the officer was pursuing the case of a 15-year-old accused of a fatal double shooting. Sanchez has information that could clear the youth. We're joined right now by Alan Diamante. He is the lawyer for Alex Sanchez. Welcome to Democracy Now! It's good to have you with us. Are you there?
Yes.
Can you start off by telling us the story of Alex Sanchez?
Well, first of all, Alex Sanchez, I have him on the other line. And I'll make an attempt to do a conference call in a little bit.
Excellent.
First of all, Alex Sanchez is an ex-gang member. In fact, he was considered a leader. And he was deported back in 94, back to El Salvador. While he was in El Salvador, his child was born in the United States, and he felt it was incumbent upon him to come back to the United States to father his child. So he came back to the United States and decided to choose a more of a righteous path of nonviolence. But at the same time, he still felt that he had that fraternity with fellow gang members. And what he did is he made it a mission of his own to not only improve himself, but to try to improve others that he's always been affiliated with. And that's how he got involved in Homies Unidos, which is an organization that uses a different approach than, let's say, LAPD, an approach to maintain the confidence and the trust of the youth and try to convert them from a violent lifestyle to a more productive lifestyle. And while Alex was doing this, he got his GED, continued his education in technical college. Meanwhile, he was very active in the community in converting these youth. In other words, a peacemaker. When there were gang wars, he would get involved as an arbitrator, and he started making a lot of contacts in the community, was recognized for his work, maintained relations with Senator Tom Hayden's office and other community leaders, and was making a name for himself as an active community organizer. During this time, he recognized the acts of the LAPD, and what I mean by acts is acts of harassment. Personally, he was harassed by several police officers, harassed, attacked. He heard stories from other youth about the harassment that they were suffering. So he voiced this. And in fact, he voiced it to a panel of community leaders. It was taped, recorded, and in which case he mentioned certain officers that would continuously harass him. One name is Jesus Amezcua, a police officer in the Rampart Division. And Amezcua had received several complaints. In fact, I think at one time 50 complaints were filed against him. And he's still walking the streets today. And in fact, some of the youth spoke out that he's still harassing them. And he even jokes around about what's going on right now at an LAPD. And meanwhile, Alex Sanchez was arrested by Amezcua in mid-January, enforcing an INS warrant for his arrest for unlawful reentry, and which is in violation of Special Order 40, which is a 20-year-old LAPD policy that police officers aren't to act like INS officers, where they harass people of color, Latinos, for their papers. And it was in direct violation of the LAPD policy, and he arrested him. And part of the harassment that Alex Sanchez would suffer was that he was threatened that he would get arrested, he would be detained, he would be deported. And this officer, Mesqua, came through with his threats. Charges were filed against him, criminal charges, federal criminal charges, for unlawful reentry. Several letters were sent to the U.S. Attorney's Office in Los Angeles, and the U.S. Attorney, in the interest of justice, decided to drop the case. However, INS, it had reinstated a prior deport order and is intending to go forward with that order. However, he is still detained with INS because Alex Sanchez has revealed to INS that he has feared a return back to El Salvador because several gang members have been killed in El Salvador and community leaders, and he feels that he'll suffer the same demise.
Now, did you say Alex Sanchez is on the line with you?
He's on the other line. I have to call you back to try to conference the call. I'm not sure if I'll be successful, but I'll give it a shot.
Okay, just one second before you do that, since we might lose you. Now, explain exactly how they ended up arresting him and what the case of the other young man is who's charged with a double murder, the case that Alex Sanchez was going to be a witness in.
Okay. Well, to answer the latter part of the question with respect to the murder case, a 14-year-old is being charged with murder. Alex Sanchez is a witness in that case, and this is just another reason why we made an argument for INS to not deport him, because he's a witness in this case. This 14-year-old that's being charged with murder was accused by these Rampart Division officers of the crime. He has an alibi. He was with Alex Sanchez and others at the time. And this is one of the things that's going on that now people are speaking out is that INS and LAPD were working together. LAPD officers would arrest certain people, and if they would find out that some of the witnesses that would be used, I guess, to contradict the LAPD officers, those witnesses would be targeted and deported. And all this is coming out right now. The lawyer handling that murder case went to the district director of INS and asked, in behalf of his client, that Alex Sanchez be allowed to stay here so he could testify in that case. The case is still pending.
Well, Alan Diamante, you can hang up and then call us back with Alex Sanchez, but hold on for 1 minute because our producer will talk to you and tell you a line to call back on. And as we wait to hear from you and Alex Sanchez, who is currently being detained by the INS, we're going to go to two other of our guests, Ramona Ripston and Jop Kamau. Ramona Ripston is executive director of the ACLU of Southern California, instrumental in the formation of a coalition for police accountability, which includes a number of community and human rights groups in the L.A. area. Jop Kamau, a former detective with the Hawthorne and Ventura Police Departments in California and now executive director of the Police Complaint Center. The stories that are coming out of Los Angeles right now, not unbelievable to people and communities who have been subjected to abuse, but perhaps for people around the country that this information is coming out. They dealt thousands of dollars in drugs. They shot and beat people for fun, sometimes going on what they called hunts for unsuspecting victims. They conspired to send innocent people to jail. They celebrated their rampages with all-night parties and awarded each other plaques for every man shot or killed. No, not a common criminal street gang. We're talking about the Los Angeles Police Department and an anti-gang unit called the Crash Rampart Division. Now, because one of their own has flipped, providing 50 hours of testimony to investigators, the corruption scandal, the largest in the history of the Los Angeles Police Department, is now unfolding, and federal authorities are moving in. More FBI investigators are coming in as well to investigate what has become a massive national scandal. Ramona Ripston, can you tell us the latest on what has come out?
Well, I think in the last few days, nothing particularly new has come out. Up until earlier this week, every day, there was more information about the activities of the officers in the crash unit. What happened 2 days ago was that the police chief has called in the FBI. So the federal government is now involved, and on Monday there is a meeting with the state attorney general to see what he can do. The problem with all of that is that the FBI, the state attorney general, they're all interested in the criminality of this crash unit. And, of course, we have to get to the bottom of this. We have to know how widely spread this scandal is. But we really need more than that. It just can't stop with prosecuting 20 offices or 50 offices or the entire crash unit. It has to go beyond that. The police chief himself has said that for many years there has been inadequate supervision in this police department. Why nobody was able to pick up what was going on is mind-boggling. The kinds of things that you just mentioned, I mean, and some, there are other things. For example, the officers had a pad a couple of blocks from the station house or the division headquarters, and they would take prostitutes there at lunchtime, give them drugs, have sex with them. One man, Mr. Obando, has become a paraplegic, and he wasn't doing anything. People who in this area, this Pico Union area, this area you just heard about,
Are you saying he was shot by police?
Yes.
Oh.
And he wasn't doing anything. Now, this scandal broke last September, and the entire city was quite quiet about it. Nobody seemed to be incensed. It is only in the last few weeks that you feel any outrage on the part of people who live in Los Angeles.
Ramona Ripston, we're going to break for stations to identify themselves. When we come back, Jop Kamau will join us also, former detective from the Hawthorne and Ventura Police Departments. And we also hope to be joined by Alex Sanchez, a Latino activist in Los Angeles who is currently in a detention facility in San Pedro, California. We're trying to get State Senator Tom Hayden on the line from Belfast in Northern Ireland, but we haven't been able to reach him yet as he calls for the Justice Department intervention into the LAPD scandal. You're listening to Democracy Now! We'll be back in a minute. You are listening to Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now!, the exception to the rulers. I'm Amy Goodman. In the last segment of today's show, we're going to be talking about Pelican Bay, one of the most high secure, but not security, not secure prisons in this country, considering what has happened over the last few days. Looks like about 15 prisoners were shot by guards. Two are critically wounded. One is dead. And we're going to find out the latest of what the authorities are calling a race riot and what it means. But now we're talking about the ever-widening LAPD corruption scandal with Ramona Ripston, executive director of the ACLU of Southern California, and Jop Kamau. Jop Kamau, former detective with the Hawthorne and Ventura Police Departments. But we have just learned that we have on the line with us right now Alex Sanchez, who is currently being held at the Federal Immigration Detention Facility in San Pedro, California, along with his lawyer, Alan Giamonte. So we'll go to them first, considering we might lose this line if you just joined us. We're talking about the case of a young Latino activist who says that the Rampart Division crash officer pursuing a case against a 15-year-old accused of a fatal double shooting, attempted to arrange the deportation of Alex Sanchez, whose testimony could clear the youth of murder charges. Alex Sanchez, welcome to Democracy Now!
Well, apparently Alex Sanchez is not on the line. This is Alan Giamonte.
Oh, he's right there. We hear him.
Oh, okay. Great, great.
Alex?
Yes.
Tell us where you are.
I'm in San Pedro, INS Detention Center.
And now, Alan Giamonte, your lawyer, laid it out a bit, what has happened to you. But in your own words, can you explain what you're doing there?
Well, I'm being held on a review of deportation after being arrested by LAPD officers' crash unit on a INS warrant.
Now, what was the LAPD doing working with the INS?
Well, those are questions that they refuse to answer. I mean, INS agents already said that LAPD worked on their own in arranging this stakeouts and arresting youth that have been deported before and then turn them into INS. And INS went ahead and picked them up from the stations or from the county. In my case, LAPD crash units picked me up and hold me until the INS picked me up.
And explain the case that you're going to testify in, why you feel that the LAPD is trying to have you deported not to participate in this case.
Well, after all the scandals with Rampart crash unit of the LAPD, this youth was one of the most active youth in the program that we started here for the youth.
And his name?
His name is Jose Rodriguez. Uh-huh. He was 14 at the time. He's 15 now. But he was accused of a murder and attempted murder. That supposedly had taken place during the time that he was at the program. So, you know, we all decided to we had to testify on his behalf because we knew his whereabouts at the time of this incident was supposed to have taken place.
Now you're talking about the program being Arts Expand, which is a theater and poetry workshop of your group, Homies Unidos.
Yes.
So you say that he was there acting in a skit with you at the time that the murder was reported?
Yes.
And you were going to testify to this at his trial?
Yes, I was. Well, I still am, hopefully.
And it was then that you were picked up. Did the LAPD know you were going to testify?
No, that just marked the beginning of a long harassment period. After they found out that he saw me at the juvenile court supporting the parents, he took it upon himself to initiate a harassment against me and the Homies Unidos program. It has been a series of stops, harassment, pushes, and searches that ended up in me being in pain.
It's very interesting. What do you mean in pain?
The searches were really rough, kicking me in my legs wide open till they couldn't go no further, and searching me up, all the way up to my crotch and actually slamming them.
Hmm. So if you are deported, if you're taken out of commission from this trial, that would be removing one of the key witnesses for Rodriguez. Is that right? That
yes.
He was at the meeting at Homies Unidos.
Yes.
I'm looking at a piece in the Los Angeles Times that lays out your case. And Anne Marie O'Connor, the Times staff writer, says, talking about the INS, federal authorities said they were blindsided by your arrest and mystified by an LAPD news release that said that the INS had been actively looking for Mr. Sanchez.
The piece right there states that, they knew my whereabouts. INS knew my whereabouts since they had been, I had brought to their attention. I was brought to their attention, so they knew my whereabouts. They could have gone and get me themselves since they have their own ways of doing their warrants. The way that this LAPD... went about handling this was a form of eliminating me from the streets since they couldn't find a criminal way for me to get arrested for.
How are people organizing around your case? You have become a major cause celeb in the community, having been taken before you were going to testify.
Well, it's something that it's been happening. For years, you know, we've been under attack by these crash units and LAPD overall in different areas. The fact that the youth and there have been peacemakers like myself, I'm not the only one that has been under harassed. There have been a series of other organizations under attack by LAPD.
Job Kamau, as you listen to this story of what has happened to this leading Latino activist who is now speaking to us from the Federal Immigration Detention Facility in San Pedro after his January 21st arrest by a Rampart officer. What is your take on this story? Jock Kamau, by the way, executive director of the Police Complaint Center, who was with us last week as we begin to explore the LAPD scandal. He's a former detective himself with the Hawthorne and Ventura Police Departments in California.
Well, first of all, it's no surprise. I was actually contacted more than 6 years ago by black gang members who reported exactly the same thing. As you may recall, after the uprising following the Rodney King verdict, there was a lot of so-called organizing around Stop the Violence and bringing youth together, and rival gangs, Bloods and the Crips, and other so-called gang members were trying to find some resolution in the community, and they repeatedly called me and said, the police are intentionally trying to disrupt our talks. They're harassing folks. Anyone who identifies himself as a leader or a peacemaker is going to be a target. And so I was unable to verify these allegations, but I knew that it was going on. And I think that, in part, this whole issue centers on the organized, in my opinion, organized devaluation of minority youth, both black and brown, through these so-called gang or units within LAPD and other police departments across the country. There's been a long collaboration going back to the Dragnet series, where police departments have utilized the media to justify their conduct in minority communities. And in this case, the crash unit, Community Resources Against Street Hoodlums, and as I said last week, what do you expect them to do when that's their name? When they organize a government unit against a minority population with the terminology that these folks are going after are street hoodlums, that basically justifies any behavior they might engage in. Moreover, you have to, again, look at the history of the LAPD. It's not just the young Latino gang members who are being attacked. They are attacking day workers, people who are waiting to get jobs. They've attacked other folks. And it's always when they know that it's black or brown, and particularly when it's Latino, that the INS threat is a trump card that they'll play in a minute. And so it goes to a mentality within the department that when they approach these folks, these young brothers and sisters are considered second-class citizens. They've already been reduced by virtue of this terminology, a gang member. I think Ramona Rifson mentioned the lack of outcry around this issue. If these were young white kids under similar circumstances, there'd be an uproar across the country. But it's still as if Los Angeles is sleepwalking through this scandal because these people who have been violated don't have any standing in the community.
Ramona Ripston, at this point, what are the various community and human rights groups in Los Angeles under the coalition of for police accountability calling for?
Well, we want reform. As I started to say before, it's important that the criminality of the police officers be examined. We need to know how widespread this whole thing is. I believe that it's not just the crash unit in Rampart. I think it's far beyond Rampart. But once we know the extent, we cannot permit the police department to say that it was just a few bad apples, that it was 20 police officers and that everybody else is clean. Now, that doesn't mean that everybody else is dirty or that all police officers act in this way. I don't believe that, and I don't think anybody does. But we need to institute some reforms within this police department because this has been going on for far too long. Number one, we need another blue ribbon commission outside the department to examine the pattern and practices of this police department, to look at the structure of the police department. The Christopher Commission looked at brutality and looked at racism. We now know that the problems go beyond those two things. So, number one, we're calling for an outside study of the police. When I say outside, I mean done by outsiders. At the moment, there is an internal group, 60 police officers called a Board of Inquiry, and they are examining the department, and on March 1st, they're supposed to tell the community what's wrong with the department. We don't believe that anybody can look at themselves and give an honest evaluation. Beyond that, there are other reforms we need. If you try to make a complaint about a police officer in Los Angeles, you go to the police department itself. More often, you have to go to the division where the mistreatment took place. We want civilian oversight of complaints. We want people to be able to make the complaints. You know, up until quite recently, it was you could be sued by a police department if you made a complaint about an officer. Fortunately, the ACLU sued and had that law declared unconstitutional. But to that was the extent to which people have been discouraged from making complaints about police officers. Furthermore, we think that if one officer wants to give information about another officer who is breaking the law, that officer should not have to go to the department. It should not be looked at internally. It should be looked at by a civilian body that's been charged with looking at the police department, and the complaint should be kept confidential until such time as enough information is developed, and at that point, the complaining police officer's identity can be told. There are just a series of reforms. This is an old-style police department. The police chief wants to keep control of this department. He does not want to let anybody in. He does not want to let anybody look at the department. He admits it's a department out of control, yet he himself resists, along with the mayor and a majority of the city council, any outside body looking at the department. What are they afraid of? Everything that you've heard this morning, I know to be true. My office is in the Rampart Division. There are good offices in this division, but there are far too many offices out of control in the entire police department. You know, the Christopher Commission came up with a series of reforms. One of the reforms was to have a comprehensive computerized system where every police officer's personnel file would be entered. You would know, somebody looking at an officer's name, you would know how many complaints there have been about that officer. You would know everything about that officer. The police department has resisted it. They even got money from the federal government to begin this approach to keeping files, and they have not set it in place.
Ramona Ripston, we have Tom Hayden on the line from Belfast right now in Northern Ireland, who the state senator has been calling for the Justice Department to intervene in the LAPD scandal. Welcome to Democracy Now!, State Senator Tom Hayden.
Hi, Amy. How are you?
It's good to be with you.
Hi, Ramona.
We also have Alex Sanchez on the line, who's currently being held at the Federal Immigration Detention Facility in San Pedro, California, picked up by the LAPD after he was it became clear he would be testifying in a trial of a young man that they were charging with murder, and he was a witness to the fact that he was somewhere else at that time. What are you calling for right now, State Senator Tom Hayden?
Well, first I'd like to thank you and say hello to Alex. Un hombre muy valiente. I think that the wheels are now turning. A number of us, civil rights attorneys included, have asked for the Justice Department and Attorney General Lockyer to intervene because Los Angeles is, like any city, notoriously unable to wash its dirty linen without at least some review and some push. I want Alex Sanchez released unconditionally by the INS. He's a case among many people who have been railroaded by the crash units into the hands of the INS against city law, against INS policy, and sent out of the country. The people will say, well, Alex is here illegally, so how can you say that? Well, number one, the U.S. prosecutor for Los Angeles has dropped that charge against Alex because he doesn't want to be involved, apparently. Number two, Alex has a family, he has a son, and above all, he has been a reformed individual and a peacemaker who helped save lives and should not be targeted, nor should his organization, Homies Unidos. And number three, the U.S. government, as you know, already allows people illegally in the country to stay if they're informants for the police. So all we're asking for is one peacemaker to be allowed to stay, perhaps subject to an annual review, but that's got to be the first step in renewing any kind of trust here.
State Senator Tom Hayden and Alex Sanchez, we have to break for stations to identify themselves. When we come back, I want to ask you what exactly, overall, in terms of this unfolding scandal that is enveloping the police department and all of Los Angeles, could bring down the city budget. Now the mayor, Mayor Reardon, is talking about using the cigarette money from the cigarette settlement to pay for the lawsuits that are expected to be more than $100 million. What exactly is going to be the final result of what we have seen unfold? You are listening to Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now! We'll be back in a minute. You are listening to Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now! I'm Amy Goodman. As we look at the ever-unfolding police corruption scandal in Los Angeles State Senator Tom Hayden on the line with us from Belfast, Northern Ireland. What are you doing there, by the way?
Police reform. I go back and forth. I'm an Irish-American, and I find it invaluable to have the ability to do comparison of inequality and investment issues and police issues in these two cities, which I consider home.
Well, right now in Los Angeles, we're talking about a scandal that's resulted in 20 officers being relieved of duty. 40 tainted convictions have been overturned. Several hundred more cases are under review. Right now, the police officer who flipped, Perez, is going to be sentenced today for, what, cocaine possession?
Sale.
Cocaine sale. So can you tell us, give us an overall picture of where you see this all going?
Well, no one really can be sure, but what's unique about the current police scandal is that it arises from the uncontrolled war on gangs and the related war on drugs being carried out by secret sort of paramilitary units within the police department, which can't be limited only to Los Angeles. But there's been and can be no civilian oversight that's meaningful when the politicians are worried about police endorsements and police expenditures and about a public that is supportive of law and order, but particularly when the crash budget is unknown. Crash is the anti-gang unit. When it's unknown, when it's secret, when its lines of authority are beyond civilian analysis. So it's not the usual case where the police have pulled over a middle-class black motorist or beaten somebody up. It's not the brutality model. What you have here is a kind of ongoing war that goes back to the 70s and 80s when this unit was formed. So I think that in addition to an inspector general with teeth and all that, the city has to make a decision to dissolve the secret paramilitary nature of this unit and reincorporate it into the guidelines of the police department, and has to be more mindful of trying to mediate disputes and create truces and create remedial education and training and the rest of it in place of what's been a failed war. And like all failed wars that are secretive, there's inherent abuses. That's what's going on.
Can you do anything at the state level with legislation?
It's somewhat frustrated. The mayor asked for $18 million for the war on gangs, and that was blocked. So the state has marginal funding. The state is in charge of certain training programs, and I've been working for years to try to get them to have a broader definition of the problem of at-risk youth or gangs. One of the INS people was quoted in the Times just 2 days ago saying that he was disappointed and leaving because that those crash people at LAPD are attacking a whole race of people. Those were his words. So we could do more on training. I've asked and met with the whole range of people in the Attorney General's office who I believe now are actively, they've been present, but now they're going to be very actively present. And apparently the FBI is now present. So I've just tried to do that as a state senator, and so much of it has to be handled at the local level. But as I said, Los Angeles has a hard time with dirty linen. You had the Watts riot in 65, the McCone Commission. You've had five commissions, McCone, Webster, Colts, Christopher, and then another review of Christopher involving law enforcement personnel in Los Angeles over the past 30 years. Issues like the code of silence, the secrecy, the abusiveness, the lack of an inspector general with teeth have now been around 35 years. So for anybody to believe that Los Angeles alone will clean this up is a mistake. And for anybody to believe that it's isolated to Los Angeles and not New York and other cities is also missing the point. That's why there ought to be...
Are you still there? Well, that does it for the state senator, Tom Hayden, who happens to be in Belfast, north of Ireland, and I hope he's okay. But we were wrapping up anyway. I do want to give, though, Alex Sanchez the last word, considering he is in the detention facility in San Pedro. We just have 30 seconds before we move on to Pelican Bay in Northern California on the border of Oregon, where the bloodiest uprising has occurred in the prison's 10-year history. At least one person is dead right now. Alex Sanchez, last word on your case or the situation overall in Los Angeles.
Well, I think that, like the Senator Tom Hayden was saying, I think it should be looked into by civilians from the outside, not internal by the LAPD. They'll just cover up themselves along the way. It's been happening for years. I believe that the Perez case and him confessing to all these other crimes that's been happening in Rampart is just the only reason why we are being heard, because a police officer came forward and brought all these issues out just to save his neck. It's the only way that we are being heard. This has been happening for years, and I'm just one individual that has been trying to speak out, and by speaking out, I've been targeted by these officers. I testified against them in a panel hearing on police harassment, and I became a target. I'm a witness for a youth that has nothing to do with the crime, and I became a target. And it will happen if something takes action against them.
Well, Alex Sanchez, I want to thank you for being with us again from the Federal Immigration Detention Facility in San Pedro, as well as Alex, as well as his attorney, Alan Diamante, who made it possible for us to do this. Again, it is not departmental policy of the LAPD. It violates departmental policy when an arrest is made by the LAPD specifically for purposes of deportation. The departmental policy is not to cooperate with the INS, and we'll continue to follow your case, Alex. Also want to thank our other guest, Ramona Ripston of the ACLU of Southern California, with the Coalition for Police Accountability, and Jop Kamau, Executive Director of the Police Complaints Center. We have so much to do. We're going to move quickly on because so much is happening in California. California prison officials now say guards wounded 15 prisoners, shot 15 prisoners and killed one when they opened fire, they say, to stop a riot. The general population of Pelican Bay State Prison remains locked down after yesterday's battle between 200 black and Hispanic prisoners. Another 32 prisoners suffered stabbing or beating injuries. At least one prisoner is in critical condition. No guards were wounded. Today, we're going to take a look at California's Pelican Bay State Prison, located 20 miles south of the Oregon border, about 7 miles drive north of San Francisco. The facility houses 3,400 prisoners. 1,200 live in permanent lockdown. We're joined by two people who know this prison well. Leslie Di Benedetto is chair of the Pelican Bay Committee of California Prison Focus, which is a San Francisco-based human rights activist group. And Luis Talamantes is with us, co-founder of California Prison Focus. He served time in prison about a quarter of a century ago. Inside, he's known as Bato. He focuses on ways to bring about racial harmony among prisoners. He's not allowed into the Pelican Bay State Prison by the current warden. Well, let's start with you, Luis. Tell us about your picture. I pretty much just read the prison authority's picture of what happened yesterday at Pelican Bay because that's all the Newswire quotes.
Amy, it's wake-up time in California. This has been long in coming. We've been talking about Natica sooner or later here in the mammoth prison system of California, which has 34 prisons currently, you know, in operation. And it's been coming, you know, that this didn't happen earlier somewhere else, you know. It happened at Pelican Bay. And Pelican Bay, right from the beginning, Amy, when it was open in 89 to today, which marks the 10-year since the opening of Pelican Bay and the reign of terror that has taken place there over this decade. So we're at a point that when it opened, it was open and built on violence. They perform violence, practice violence, perpetuate violence. The place is a violent place, institution. Mm-hmm. To this day, nothing has changed except that the violence has increased. And it's shown itself in just different horrible ways, such as this mass shooting that took place Wednesday.
Well, tell us, the prison authorities say it's a race riot. Can you talk about what's going on within the prison, how they say the prisoners had something like they uncovered 88 weapons, and why groups like yours aren't allowed in?
Well, yeah, well, 88 weapons. We want to know, first of all, where did the weapons come from? And, yes, it was a racial brawl. And now we're understanding that on the yard, all races were present. And yet they say it was a Hispanic-black conflict. But the whole place, the whole prison is in conflict. On August of last year, it was the biggest riot ever in the department's history, and that was between blacks and whites, okay? So it is manifesting itself, this locked-up rage and violence in Pelican Bay, which they attribute so heavily to prisoners by calling them the worst and worse and worse. But yet, which, you know, in that institution, violence is there, and it just manifests itself in different ways. In this instance, there was 200 guys on the BR, and a friend of mine who also did time with me said, Vato, if you're on the yard when something like that goes down, then you're in it, whether you want to be or not. So my heart goes out to the guys who were on that yard fighting for their life, probably not even knowing why they were fighting each other, but fighting for their life.
Well, let's bring Leslie Di Benedetto into the conversation. Yesterday, you were telling me about a quote in the paper of one of the guards talking about, or one of the staff people talking about tension. and who it serves.
Right. There was a one-year lockdown on another Level 4 prison, which is one of our high-security general population units in California, which resulted in a hunger strike of about, I think, 60 prisoners. And one of their demands was to be allowed back on the yard with other prisoners that they got along with. And the person that was negotiating with them, his name is Ken Hurdle, he's actually an ombudsman for the Department of Corrections, which means that he's supposed to be working as a liaison between prisoners and staff. His quote was basically said, then you'd have two groups normally aligned on the yard at the same time. They would only have staff as their enemy. So basically the thinking is, you know, we need to have rival groups on the yard, rival, you know, people who don't necessarily get along on the yard so that they can fight themselves so that we, you know,
so
we
they
are
don't
kind
fight
of,
the staff.
Right, exactly.
All right, we only have 2 minutes to go. And
I actually wanted to let you talk to someone very briefly. He's a friend of mine who was in Pelican Bay on the general population yard in 1995, and he just wanted to make a couple quick comments about his analysis. Hold on.
You're listening to Pacific Radio's Democracy Now. Hi, thanks for being with us. What's your name?
Well, for security reasons and, you know, fear of retribution, I prefer not to disclose that information right there.
Well, we only have 2 minutes to go left on the show, but can you describe what life was like at Pelican Bay?
Well, for different prisoners, it was... You have to understand that in Pelican Bay you have different classes of prisoners. You have politically conscious prisoners, then you have the politically unconscious. And you have different ways the prisoners are evaluated and placed on different programs while in Pelican Bay. So if you're classified in a particular category, then the way you're treated by the administration could be, you know, fundamentally different from a prisoner who's opposite in this thinking.
In the last few days, it's very important to note what's happened before this so-called race riot. Two former guards were charged with violating the civil rights of Pelican Bay inmates. A federal grand jury indictment was made public Wednesday, accusing them of arranging assaults on prisoners over a three-year period, and one of those assaults was fatal. Last week, another guard was convicted of civil rights charges for shooting a prisoner after a fight in 94. Does this sound like the prison that you were in?
Oh, yes, most definitely. I personally witnessed guard brutality as well as collaboration between certain prisoners and guards to attack and maim prisoners while I was in Pelican Bay. So it's definitely a relationship that exists in that type of environment up at Pelican Bay State Prison.
Given the information you've gotten, and it's tough to get information out of a prison when there's this kind of situation, when you only get it from the authorities, what is your assessment of what happened in the last 2 days?
Well, my assessment thus far is, first of all, I haven't had the opportunity to do a concrete investigation, but the information that's coming out of Pelican Bay as well as in Sacramento is controlled, and I don't buy for 1 minute that a riot existed on the yard for 30 minutes because the guards in Pelican Bay have been trained to use lethal force immediately in order to defuse an incident. Just recently, they implemented new shooting procedures, of which kind of put guards in check in terms of breaking up fist fights with live gunfire. So the 30-minute riot incident is kind of unbelievable.
Well, on that note, we do have to end the discussion, but we'll continue to pursue what happened there and hope to get more word out from inside the prison. This following what has taken place in Corcoran over the last year is another high-security prison in California where guards would bring rival gang members into the yard at the same time, known sworn enemies. They would get in a fight, and then they would shoot one of them. The guards would shoot one of them dead. Thanks for being with us. Leslie DiBenedetto, thanks for setting that up, chair of the Pelican Bay Committee of California Prison Focus, and Luis Talamantes, we will speak again since we didn't have enough time to speak this time, co-founder of California Prison Focus. That does it for the show. Democracy Now! Is produced by Maria Carrion and David Love. Errol Maitland is our technical director. We'd like very much to hear from you. You can write us by email, democracy@pacifica.org. That's democracy@pacifica.org. From the studios of WBI in New York, I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for listening to Democracy Now!